Okay, this is an interview of Ed Gerner.
Yeah.
And today is the 9th of February, 2003. Ed served in the 450th Bomb Group, the 720th Bomb Squadron, of the 47th Wing.
Wing, yeah.
And he's going to relate his experiences. So, Ed, if you want to start out by talking about your training, maybe, in the States,
okay.
When you first joined, or
okay.
Tell us why you joined, maybe, or where.
Okay. I joined the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in October of 1942, and I was called in early 1943, and I was sent to SAC down San Antonio, and from San Antonio, they sent me to pre-flight, which was at Ellington Field. We were sort of getting training for being in the Army. And from pre-flight, I was sent to Hondo, Texas, where I went through navigation school. As I recall, I think it was 18 weeks, and half of it was celestial navigation, the other half was pilotage and DR navigation.
Now, what is DR?
Dead reckoning.
Okay.
Dead reckoning navigation. Okay. And I graduated on October the 23rd, 1943. I became acquainted with another navigator by the name of Jack Hayes, and he was married and I was married at the time. When we graduated, we thought we were going to get a 10-day leave. And instead of getting a 10-day leave, they were told us we were immediately going to go to Boise, Idaho. This fellow had practically a brand new car, and he didn't know what he was going to do with his car. So I told him, I says, if you want to, I'll drive straight on through with you. It was 1,800 miles. So the two of us and the two wives drove straight through to Boise, Idaho. We arrived there Monday afternoon, and we were assigned to a crew. The crew was, Mulholland was the pilot, and Jack Haller was the co-pilot. Daniel Healy was the navigator, and myself was a four officer, and there were six enlisted men. From there, we went to phase training. The first phase was sent to Pocatello, Idaho, where the bombardier practiced dropping bombs. We did this for about a month, day and night. From there, we went to Mount Nahom, Idaho. It was the second phase, and this was for the pilot to practice. The pilots practiced missions, he practiced instrument flying, and they practiced flying in formation. From there, we were sent to Muroc, California, in the Mojave Desert, the third phase. And the third phase was for the navigator. And we practiced flying missions every day and every night to Phoenix, Tucson, and back. We did this, and then finally, at the end of this period, we were sent up to, can you stop it 1 second?
Sure.
I wanted to think just a second about it.
Would you like to resume?
Okay. From Muroc, we were sent up to Hamilton Field, which is in San Rafael, California. As soon as we arrived in San Rafael, they gave us a 10-day leave, which we thought we were going to get when we graduated down at Hondo. Wife and I went home to visit the folks. We spent 7 of the 10 days on a train coming and going. As we returned back to San Rafael, we spent some time there, and then we left to go overseas, not knowing exactly where we were headed. From San Rafael, California, we flew over across the country to West Palm Beach, Florida. From West Palm Beach, Florida, we went down through the Caribbean, and we were having some trouble with the airplane, and we landed at the St. Thomas Island. I took a look at the airplane. We flew on to South America. From South America, we went over to Africa and landed in Dakar. From Dakar, we went to Marrakech. In Marrakech, they really tore the plane apart. They called it a hangar queen. And they were taking parts from that airplane for other planes, so we wind up spending almost a month there. We finally left, flew up to Tunis, and from Tunis, when we took off, we got our orders where we were going, and it turned out to be Manduri, Italy. We landed in Manduri, Italy, in the first part of May. The crews were just coming back from mission that day. Some of them come back with several holes in the planes. One plane hit a bomb bay door hanging by one hinge. And as I understand it, if it froze up there, they just dropped the bombs on through the bomb bay doors to get rid of the bombs. We didn't fly the mission for a couple days yet, but the co-pilot by the name of Jack Holler, he had a wife who was a nurse over at Naples, and he could take an airplane. They'd let you take an airplane to go if you wanted to go somewhere around in Italy at the part that was okay to go. And he asked me if I'd fly over there with him. We got just north of Salerno, and they start shooting at us. We come back with a whole bunch of holes in the plane. I told him, I said, get out over the water. We got out over the water, and we come back. He got all kind of heck when he got back. Of course, the CO on the base did not know what happened. The whole bicycle landing, the front part was shot out on the landing gear. That was my first experience with Flak.
Excuse me, did he get to see his wife?
No, he didn't get to see her on that trip, but we went back for a second time. We went back for a second time. He got to see her, but we were told that the IFF was not working on the plane. And the English start shooting at us. They didn't know whether it was an enemy aircraft flying a B-24 or what it was. So we did go back on another trip when we saw his wife. Then on, was it May the 12th when we started flying the first mission?
I believe it was something like that, yes.
Seemed like it was May the 12th. We flew our first mission. On the first mission, they split up the crews. We flew with Jeff, a pilot, and Jeff trained with us in the States, but by the time we got up there, Jeff's crew had already flown 17 missions.
Oh, that's John Jeff?
John Jeff, yeah. He had already flown 17 missions.
Do you know why they broke up the crews, Ed?
No, you have no idea. Well, in the beginning, I think they did that with everybody.
Really?
Came over, they wanted them to fly with crews that had some experience.
Okay.
So we're set, we're going over to Orbitello, Italy. They said, this will be a milk run. So we go over, it's on the west coast of Italy. And we get over the target, we drop the bombs and we come off and they send up some flak. They hit one B-24 and the thing split right in half and half the plane flew through the air and hit another plane. And Jeff was sitting there and Mulhall was the co-pilot. And Jeff says to him, he says, look, and his hands were just shaking like that, he said. And the radio operator on the crew, we had throat mics on, and this guy was so nervous by the time he had flown 17 missions that when they clicked that thing, it made a noise, and when it did, I thought he was going to jump through the top of the airplane. So anyway, this was my first experience. This was a milk run. No flak, no nothing supposed to be there. So we went back. This was my first experience. We had some very bad experiences over Wiener Neustadt, where they had rockets that they were shooting at the airplanes. And whatever. And some other missions I just don't recall at this particular time. But we went along with our missions. And on the 26th of June, Brown, who was the group navigator, asked me to fly with him in the lead plane. And what they did, and I don't remember the exact date they started doing this, but they started putting two navigators in the lead plane. And one would be in the nose turret, and he would just do pilotage, and he would watch out for different things and report to the regular navigator if he saw anything unusual on the trip. When we come back, we had a very successful mission over Swakot, and Brown put me in for the Distinguished Flying Cross. Somewhere shortly after this, they start sending up B-24s at nighttime, one at a time, and nobody knew exactly why they were doing this. I found out later on why they were doing this. They're just picking different crews. They never asked me to go up at nighttime. I think if you hit a certain amount of missions, you didn't go up at night. Mm-hmm. I think it was something to that extent. So Brown comes to me one day, and he says that they had just gotten a bunch of POWs back, and they were going to fly somewhere to get them. He says, will you take over as the group navigator while I'm gone? Mm. So I said, sure. So I took over as the group navigator. So they get me out of the tent.
So this is for the whole 450th?
Yeah, for the 450th bomb group, yeah. And some days the group navigator would even be the wing navigator. He'd fly, be the lead for the whole wing.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm laying in the tent this afternoon, and they called me to come down to headquarters. And I went down to headquarters, and they got all these maps laid out on the table. And they said, this is it, the invasion of southern France. And they said, so naturally, since I was a group navigator, I had to lay out the whole mission. At the what time we were going to be over the target, whatever. They said, don't drop any bombs after 7:15, that the troops are going ashore at 7:30. I then realized why they had these guys flying at night. They were trying to get oriented to to what it was like over there at nighttime, because there was no radio contact, there was no nothing, no lights. And here the guy that was flying at night, he's down there bringing back POWs. And so anyway, we flew over from there to Corsica. And from Corsica, we flew on up to the southern coast of France. As it turned out, there was no opposition up there whatsoever.
So the target would have been the beachfront itself?
Beachfront, right. The beachfront, I think it's listed in that on those missions there. So we come back from that mission. So then I flew about two more missions, I think with Mulholland, as I recall. And then they made me the squadron navigator. So then I flew the last missions with Radue and with Kaywood as the squadron navigator, which was about the last 10 or 12 missions. I finished my missions on September the 15th, Larissa, Greece. And that was a milk run. There was no flak, no nothing when we got over. In fact, I don't think we dropped the bombs that day. I think the weather was so bad, but we still got credit for the mission. So I come back, completed my missions. Brown was finished, and Brown wanted me to take over as group navigator.
Now, Brown's first name was what again?
Robert Brown.
Robert Brown.
Robert Brown, yeah. So I said, no. I said, I want to go home. So I stuck around till December. And the 1st of December, they sent me over to Naples. And in Naples, we got on a boat, and I arrived back in New Jersey. I'm trying to think of the name of the place in New Jersey. I think he used to bring all the men in there. Anyway,
was it Bayonne, maybe?
No, that don't sound right.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what that was like coming back on the ship, what the conditions were like?
Oh, it was a dandy. It was a dandy. We got into a storm, 100-mile-an-hour winds.
Oh, no.
And I'm telling you, half the guys got sick on that boat coming back. We came back by boat. And we hit a destroyer escort. And the mast on these destroyers, the things were going over at 45-degree angle each side. So it was quite an experience coming back on that trip on the boat. Then they sent me to Fort Benjamin Harris in Indiana. And from Fort Benjamin Harris, I got to come home. We come home during the Christmas holidays. So I was home then during the Christmas holidays. And after the Christmas holidays, we were sent down to Miami Beach for a little R&R. From there, after the R&R, they sent me back to Ellington Field. I was at Ellington Field for a while. We'd fly missions every so often.
Now that's in what state?
Houston, Texas.
Okay.
And I had an opportunity, if I wanted to transfer, to the Air Transport Command. And I thought this would be great because they were going to send us to Berry Field in Nashville, Tennessee. And I thought this will be the first time I've ever been close to home since I've been in service. So we'd come home on weekends. We'd take off. I had a car at that time. And we'd take off and come home for the weekends. So after a few weekends, I was going to go out on my first trip. We were going to ferry an aircraft to Indy. And I had a crew there, and some of the crew members were going to be permanent, and the rest of us were coming back to the States after the trip. So we flew back out to San Rafael, same place where I'd been, that area, and pick up the paper the next morning. Headlines in there to drop the first atomic bomb over Hiroshima. So we didn't know what the heck was going to happen. So they said, well, go ahead, go on to Hawaii. So we go on to Hawaii. Newspaper, they dropped the second one on Nagasaki. So there's all kind of rumors about the Japanese. They still sent us on to Guam. We stayed on Guam for a while. They had a lot of POWs on the island of Guam.
Ed,
yeah.
What type of plane were you flying in at this point?
C-54.
C-54 transport.
Out in the Pacific with C-54s, mm-hmm. Yeah. So from Guam, they sent us up to Okinawa. Well, somebody decided that since the Japanese were getting ready to surrender, and we were going to fly a bunch of troops in to Japan for the surrender, but somebody decided that since we originally were not sent over for that reason, that we could not fly them in, but they took our airplane. So we're sitting on Okinawa for I don't know how many days, and it was ridiculous, all the people that were on there. You know, sir, clean your mess kit. It was time to go eat again. It took all that time in between. So finally they sent us out and they sent us down to the Philippines. So I was sitting in the Philippines when they flew the Japanese in to go to MacArthur's headquarters. So finally then they flew us back to the States. We got back to the States, no sooner got back, and they says, you're going back to San Rafael, California. Well, it made my wife really happy because she loved it out there. She thought it was really nice in that locality. So we went out back out to San Rafael, and from then I flew a regular run from San Rafael, California, to Hawaii, to Kwajalein, to Guam, to Tokyo, the Philippines, and back. And I did that for about a year, year and a half. And finally, I became the ramp control officer out there. And all the ramp control officer did, he went out in a Jeep and he made sure they hit everything on the airplane that was supposed to be on there. Fleet service, food, and whatever. And then I would call the tar and tell them it was okay for the plane to take off, you know. So I did that. In the meantime, I see we were all in the reserves at that time. Nobody got a regular commission in the Army. They just got a commission in the reserves as a reserve officer. So something come up and they said that you could go up to California, I don't remember the location, it was up north, and take exams for a regular commission. So I'll go up there and take these things. In the meantime, they hit something, they'd come out with every so many months that you had a sign. In category one was that you wanted to stay in indefinitely. In category two was that you wanted to stay in until June 1947. In category three was you wanted out in December 46. And the last one was that you wanted out immediately. Well, I thought indefinitely was a pretty long time when you didn't know where you were going to be. So I'm signing this thing for category two all the time, which was June of 47. So now at this particular time, we're talking here of the fall of 46. So anyway, I take these exams. It lasted about 2-3 days. I'll never pass this thing. Some of the things were in there. So I said, well, if you didn't hear anything, you passed, and you'd be hearing from them. So I get back to the base. Shortly after that, I get a letter. Says, let all Category 2 men out immediately. They wanted to get rid of a bunch of guys that were in service. I think they had too many people in there. So just like that, we were on our way home. So I'm on my way home. So some of the other fellows, I guess Glenn Hacker, I understand later on, he got this notice when he was on his way home and turned around and went back and decided to stay in. So I come home, I get a job.